You're now listening to The Brian Callen Show, considered the hottest podcast in the universe. Now get ready for the heat. Here's Brian Callen.
All right, here we are, The Brian Callen Show with my colleague Hunter Motz. Sarah Tiana is joining us, and not only is she adorable, she's also, I think you're one of the funniest female comics, period.
Thank you.
And I mean that.
Thank you.
You know, I love you. It's like I'm late for this podcast, but Sarah, you know, it doesn't matter because I know Sarah so well, so she can come back anytime.
I was a little late too, so it's not like you were the only one.
I told them that I was late because I got to sit there and talk to Sean Penn and Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Who?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I didn't feel like walking away from them at the Chateau Marmont with John Leguizamo and when you're with him, everybody knows. He's done 100 movies.
Yeah.
So he was worked with everybody. It's like I was in Atlanta, and he goes, oh, hang on, I got a friend coming to see us. And it's just me and him eating, and Arnold Schwarzenegger sits down and eats with us for 2 hours. For real. It's Arnold Schwarzenegger.
What did Arnold Schwarzenegger eat?
A cup, and not a bowl, but a cup of butternut squash soup.
No.
That was it.
That's it.
Swear to God.
Did he eat before he got there?
I don't know, but he had just finished shooting, and he said he was just talking about how, initially, how happy he was that basically he was still relevant and he could still work.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's insecure. No one has anything over anybody.
No.
Every time I see stars or big people, you know, as you get older at my age, you start to meet some people and you're also, if I'm with Sean Penn or Philip Seymour Hoffman, they're much better and they're more successful. There's not a big difference as men. We both connect. And I'm not starstruck. I just think, oh, they're great actors of my generation. But we're guys. We're not talking about acting. We're just talking about life. And
right.
We've all had similar experiences. And so you no longer as impressed because it's not a mystery. Those guys are not mysteries. When I was younger, they're mysteries. Oh, man, you're live. Well,
yeah.
I wonder what you're like. No. It's I know it's just the work and they're good at what they do in one specific, very peculiar thing. It's fine and good people, but it's just...
We're all insecure.
Nobody has... Exactly.
We're artists. I mean, Jeff Garland gave me the best advice ever. You know how they always say that luck is just persistence plus time in this business? Well, Jeff Garland always says persistence is just keeping it together when nothing is going on. So instead of like when I'm not working, I don't think of it as being lazy or I try not to get depressed about it. I just go, I'm being persistent. I'm not quitting.
And
if you think about it like that, then you're one step ahead of everybody else who's like mad at themselves for not working. It's like we're always working because we work in our brain.
Absolutely. Like especially as comics, right?
As comedians, like I'm like, I don't have a day off. I work up here in this region above my eyes.
That's exactly right.
And so now I take Sundays off, though. I don't work on Sundays. That's the Lord's Day, meaning football. I just watch football all day or sports or whatever. And I give myself that day to just like experience life. And if I want to lay on the couch, that's fine. If I want to go to the farmer's market, whatever.
That's something that has to be learned. That's called peace of mind to an extent.
But it's also an acquired ability. Like, I obviously worked on Sundays for the first 8 years of my career.
Yeah.
But then now it's like, if I don't go and do comedy, I'm still going to be funny tomorrow.
Well, I don't remember you not being funny. And that's because. But I mean, the thing about you is that you're a legit comic, and that's not easy to accomplish. Like, one of the things that I've always noticed about you, I haven't seen you stand up in a while, but I know you're always improving and always writing new stuff, and that's probably the fundamental difference between you and so many comics. And I just think it's really hard for women, for whatever reason. It's just a lot harder for women to be not only stand-up comics, but especially stand-up comics on your level. Like, I think you, and I love Eliza Schlesinger. Mm-hmm. I think she's funny as hell, too. You know, there are very few women that I just really can sit there and watch. It's not because women aren't as funny. It's just, I think culturally and maybe even the gender doesn't necessarily connect with humor. Women don't connect with humor.
Well, I think it's hard for people to laugh at a woman. I mean, as we as we grow up, we're taught to like be respectful and like you're supposed to be nice and like, so it's very difficult for men to laugh at a woman. Like, that feels awkward and weird. But now we're in a new generation where that's a little bit more acceptable. And for me, I feel like comedy is the last form of free speech. And so I'm really up there to like
Brian says
use,
that all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I'm up there to use my 15 minutes or an hour, whatever I have, to really connect and get across things that I'm upset about. And like, everything that I talk about is very personal. It means a lot to me. I don't go up there and talk about anything that's not real. But also, like, I feel like we're in a generation of female comics now. And I look at being a female comic as an advantage, especially mm-hmm. if you're good at it. Mm-hmm. Like, I have a huge advantage over a white male comic.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to get booked just because I'm a woman and they yeah. need a woman on the
and
show.
And get that HBO special and all that.
Yeah, well, we'll see about that. But.
well, we'll see about that.
Well.
This podcast is about to push you over the edge. Hope you're ready for stardom, bitch. Here it comes.
Yeah, so I just feel, and I feel like also there's this like era of comedy, it's like in men and women, but especially women where, you know, Sarah Silverman like really pushed the edge and like made everything a little bit edgier for female comics and kind of opened those doors. And I feel like she had a lot of followers.
Mm-hmm.
And I am not like that. Like I don't consider myself a whore or a slut. I don't appreciate being called that.
Well, this podcast is
over. But you're right.
I'm a whore in the kitchen and I'm a lady in the bedroom. You know what I mean? Like I feel like it's important to realize that like, no, you have to treat me like a lady because I treat you like a fucking man with respect. Like I love men and I feel like we've lost that like connection in society where like, I feel like when I'm on stage and I'm telling men about what they're doing wrong, like they don't get offended because I'm just trying to help you get laid more. I'm not here to say like, you suck. Yeah. I never want to sleep with you. I'm like, no, I want to sleep with you, but I need you to take off the Skechers. You know,
that's refreshing. You come from the South, right?
Yeah, I'm from Georgia.
Yeah. So you were raised with those archetypal and traditional sort of norms.
I was raised around it. Like my parents are not from Georgia, so I was raised and in my house to like my parents never, still to this day, they never go, you should get married, we want grandkids. Like I never hear that. I've never heard that growing up. And we had a daycare center in my high school growing up because, you know, in the South, that was like tradition. Like people got married. I had a lot of friends that got married in high school.
Wow.
Like before college.
Wow.
Yeah. And
really?
And my parents made me get a job when I was 15. So I was just so busy that I would never even think about like getting pregnant or having sex or anything like that. And they also like, they never told me what religion they were because they're like, you're smart enough to figure out like what you want to be.
Right.
And I grew up in a town where like you were either Southern Baptist or you were getting ready to move.
Is that
was
right?
Your choice.
Man.
So yeah, I mean, people wouldn't have decks of cards in their house because that was gambling.
Wow.
Yeah. Like
so
it was crazy.
Do you think that you, would you remember the seminal moment when you decided, first of all, why do you think you became a stand-up comic and why do you think you, when did you decide?
I didn't decide. I started stand up on a dare. I never thought that.
Really?
I never thought about it. I, you know, when you're, especially in the South, like I realized I was really funny all the time, but people would always say, Sarah, that's not funny. You're not funny, because I was really sarcastic.
Right.
And sarcasm doesn't always resonate.
In the South, you get punched in the face.
Yeah.
Sometimes they don't get irony, right?
They don't. Like sometimes it's like, you know, like, you know, black people are the worst. And they're like, ah! I'm like, no. That's not a joke. And that's not, you know, so.
Yeah.
And then, or like I would say things like, you know, on stage, I used to say something like guns don't kill people, black people kill people. And then they, like to me that's a joke because it's ridiculous and it's ironic and but it is, it's not a, you know, stereotypes.
You're also playing on prejudice
stereotypes. Are not facts. I mean, they're based on facts, but they're not facts.
Right.
And I just realized that a lot of people were taking that in a way that I didn't really appreciate. So then I changed my comedy up a lot like 3 years ago. And it also because I started going to therapy and really figuring out who I was and like, because I went through a lot of bad relationships and I was like, why am I dating all these assholes? And then I realized, oh, no. I'm the asshole. Like, I'm picking them.
Why do you think?
I'm picking them.
Why do you think you were picking them?
I was picking them because it's much easier to be the victim. It's a lot easier to say, like, oh, you know, he treated me bad. But it's like, really, like, you're staying with someone because you want them to break up with you. And then you can call them when you didn't really want to be with them in the first place. But it's a lot easier to be like, oh, he didn't love me enough. Where it's like,
It's almost playing a character then.
Yeah, you know, you're just sacrificing what you really want so that you can feel like you didn't do anything wrong.
Well,
Whereas that's
interesting.
You did do something wrong. Like you stayed in a relationship
and you
with
chose
someone
the wrong guy.
You chose the wrong guy just so that you could always feel like saying like, oh, he's not doing this and he's not doing that. Whereas I realized I needed to start saying like, no, I want this. I need this. You're not giving me this. I'm leaving.
So let me ask you this, because one of the narratives that we hear a lot today is about how, you know, women have their shit so together and, like, you know, what's up with men? They're not carrying their way, you know, all that sort of stuff. But it seems like some of what you're saying is that, you know, women are to blame in part for the reason why there's not enough good guys out there.
I think that women don't expect enough. I think what's happened is what happens is, like, when you're a single woman in this country, especially in your 30s, it feels like you're on probation in prison. And the only way to get out is to be on your best behavior. Mm-hmm. So what happens is we just, like, let men get away with a lot of things because we're too afraid to say, like, stop doing that, or I don't like that, or you need to cut your hair, that's disrespect, whatever it is, because we're afraid that he's going to break up with us and then we're not going to have anybody in our lives.
It's really interesting because I hear that a lot. Like, I'll hear a lot of guys love to throw around, she's crazy.
Yeah.
She's crazy.
I hate that word.
She's not crazy, bro. You just make her feel really insecure because you're a donut to her. You're just a shithead
But also, if she's not realizing that and leaving, then that's her problem.
Yeah, and the problem, though, is this is a very lonely town, too.
Right.
When you're alone, this town can be just miserable.
Yeah.
Even when you're working. Like, you can be working and making money, but if you don't have somebody to share with, and you know, finding the right person in this town, I mean, is... Well, you got to go out of this town. You got to leave the town.
Yeah, I mean, my problem is I had really great parents. My parents have been married 40 years. They're fantastic. Like, my mom was a seamstress on the side, and she used to make all my clothes for the plays that I was in, and she would make all the costumes for everybody.
So you were a kid, you were a child actor.
In plays, in school and stuff, yeah. And then in church, because I decided to go to church in eighth grade, and my parents were like, okay, we'll drive you. And they would drive me and drop me off, and then...
Do you still go to church?
No, I'll go to Catholic churches sometimes, just especially when I'm traveling. I love going to mosques or temples or churches just to feel small and to, like, realize, like...
Just to feel small. That's interesting.
Yeah, just so you go, like...
It's humbling,
okay,
isn't it?
It is really humbling. And, and you think about all the money that goes into those churches.
Yeah.
And I really can't give money. Well, I mean, a mosque would never ask for money, but a Catholic church always will. And... So and I'll buy, like, a candle and I'll just sit there. And I think the biggest, what I do when I go to church is I listen. I think people clog up the airwaves with prayer, like asking for things that they want. When it's like, no, the universe knows what you want. Mm-hmm. But you need to listen and figure out what to do with that.
Well, the Catholic masses in the mid, really for most of the history of the Christian church, and especially in the Middle Ages, that they would, the priest would usually be reading the Bible in Latin, and usually in a murmur, and people would come and they didn't understand what he was saying. They didn't even speak Latin. They certainly couldn't read, but the church itself was a place where people could come, be quiet, what you said, listen, find inspiration, and have something called a humble communion with your own soul,
right?
Whatever that means. Mm-hmm. So where people like our good friend who did the podcast, Lawrence Krauss, who's a theoretical physicist and a radical atheist, I think missed the mark is that they find religion to be small and petty and all that. I think that they are assuming that all people believe that religion is something that we believe firmly with a capital T, truth, and we believe, and it's a literal interpretation. No. A lot of times religion can be exactly what you're talking about, which is I just want to go in there, feel small, be part of something that's been around for 5,000, 1,700, 2,000, 2,500 years old. And there is something very, maybe liberating or relaxing or inspiring or wondrous or pick your word. That's the value of religion, and you know, that's the value of giving. Look, you know, a religious act in some ways for many people is giving when they know not only are they going to get nothing back, they might lose something. Why do we do that as human beings? What is that altruistic spirit about? Don't know. I suppose you could explain it biologically and maybe, but I'm not interested.
It feels good to give things. But like what you were talking about, like I realized a few years ago as well that I was not enjoying working out. Like I didn't like any, like I was, and I realized that I'm clogging my head with like music and distraction. And so when I would work out, I stop listening to music and I just like go and like get in my head and think things through. And And I can really like be creative. I can figure out jokes, or if I'm mad at a guy, I can really figure out what the, I can dissect the problem. And so I realized that like, I feel like we live in a society where there's so much going on that we can't focus because we have so many distractions. So we have to take those moments.
But specifically, you're talking about getting to know yourself.
Yeah.
You know, that's you know, distractions and focus, focusing on who you are and what you're doing here is probably, right. You know, I always think of it that way. I think music is great, but I find myself, I think it always feels like it's procrastination because I have too much to write and come up with.
I gotta come up with new. I need it sometimes, you know, you need to just like sing loud in your car if you're like,
do you fantasize about being the singer?
No.
I do.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Because comics want to be rock stars and rock stars want to be comics.
Totally.
It's so funny. Do you know Adam Duritz from Counting Crows?
I love Adam Duritz.
Yeah. So he's a good friend of mine. And like his August and Everything After got me through a couple breakups.
One of the great albums, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the great albums, period.
Period. Yeah. Yeah. So, but he thinks he's really funny. And, I think he is funny. But I think what it comes down to is like, as musicians, they're playing this music and the crowd is like humming along with them. And then once the song ends, there's this moment in between songs where you have to keep the crowd captivated.
Yeah.
And that's when they want to be a comic.
Yeah.
Whereas like when we're doing a bit, between bits, like we want to drown out the silence with music. You know what I mean?
That's true.
So it's like, I think that we have so much in common with rock stars and musicians. And, you know, because of that aspect.
I actually had Harry Connick Jr. and Fiona Apple tell me, both of whom I've slept with.
at the same time.
Nice. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Was her dog watching? Into,
yes, yes. Yeah, yeah.
And her late dog.
We, how did you know her dog? Her little Brady or Brandy.
Her dog that passed away. Yeah. Well, that's why she canceled her last tour.
No. She would. I love Fiona, but Fiona, please, get another dog. Anyway,
no,
I love her. I got to get her on the podcast.
No,
anyway.
She wrote like this amazing letter to her fans of like why she was not going to be there and why she needed to like be with her dog. Because the dog was about to die.
Yeah.
So she wanted to be with the dog, like because the dog had taken her through so many dark times. It was a really beautiful letter.
Brian, did she cancel her tour after she broke up with you?
Yes. She's amazing. She actually wrote me a letter once and I've kept it and never read it to anybody because it's such an amazing letter.
Yeah.
Just she's so poetic. It just comes out of her. You know?
Yeah.
But both of them told me that stand-up is very similar to songs. In fact, I spoke to Bruce Springsteen about how he writes a song, and I was like, I think I write stand-up the same way.
Right.
Like, you know, in other words, like so much of a song is rhythm and choosing the right order of words and where do you emphasize the word. And we do the same thing as comics.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm the greatest there is at it, but you're good.
Don't you think that's true with any creative endeavor, though, whether you're writing a book or writing a screenplay or anything
like
rhythm,
that? Right?
It's all rhythm, and it's, I mean, you know.
Yeah.
I know for the book that we wrote, so much of it was figuring out, oh, what idea goes first? Like, what's going to set up? Like, is this the right place for a joke? Like, is that going to, like, diminish the power of the sincere moment we're trying to have?
I think the difference with comedy is that we have the ability of trial and error, which is where we can go up there and try it, and if it doesn't work, then we'll try it a different way the next time.
You know it doesn't work right away. Just fucking crickets.
But, you know, Bruce Springsteen isn't doing trial and error in front of 100,000 people, you know? Like, we have to do trial and error. And, like, for me, I come up with an idea and I'll kind of like write like a jot list and then I'll write it and talk about it on stage because I have to connect with the crowd in order to make the work.
That's right.
And every crowd is different, so everybody connects with different parts of it until you finally figure out all the puzzle pieces that like work together, and then you're like, okay, that's like a 7-minute bit, and that will take me like 6 months to write. But I mean, I don't write just
that's
one
That's such
bit.
A refreshing thing to be able to do, though, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I always feel so special that I am part of this tiny fraternity with people like you and my other friends who I think are really funny. Like, people say, who are your favorite comics? I'm always like, my friends.
Yeah.
The guys I watch every day and the girls I watch every day. Like, you know, I you can talk about anybody you want. I think the people that I'm around on a daily basis are as funny as anybody on the planet.
Yeah.
You know, from David Off to Brett Ernst to Steve Byrne to, you know,
Steve Simone.
Yeah. I mean, you and Eliza, and there's some great comics out there, man.
I mean, that's the reason we go back to the Comedy Store. It's not just to like practice, but it's also to hang out with your friends who who bring like this funny aura around mm-hmm. that you can all kind of hover in, and it's this little bubble. And it really is like a clubhouse. It's a very, it's a country club. The Comedy Store is like a community that you have to like really wait forever to get
the
into.
The bummer is that, you know, when you see like, you see like Sean Penn or Philip Seymour, we all know what they do because mm-hmm. we see it all the time. Nobody ever sees what we do, like the, no. When we're at our best, because it's live.
I mean,
you can shoot a special, but somehow it doesn't really, you know.
No, not the same.
I hope my next special is what I want it to be, but there's nothing like a live performance. Like, you know, you have those live performances that crush a room and then they just go away.
Right.
And then it's like, I wish somebody, it'd be nice to get that recognition sometimes. Sometimes you feel like you're alone in the world.
Yeah,
you know?
Now we're just throwing it out there and now it's never going to be repeated.
It's fine.
Or seen again.
It's fine, but it's just the way it is, I guess, you know.
Well, it's kind of like how I always, like, I feel like I used to wait tables at 5-star hotels for years, like Four Seasons. That's where I met Sebastian. We used to work there together.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, and another great comic.
Yeah. And then I worked at the Beverly Hills Hotel for a really long time, and I would meet all these amazing actors and stuff. But then I would meet an athlete, and I'm like, oh, like I can't even, I can't even speak, because I'm like, you have talent, like real talent, like tangible talent.
Yeah.
And I've really,
I'm
you know,
a bitch when it comes to pro athletes.
Oh my God, I can't even like hold my pee in sometimes. And and I don't get like that around actors or musicians or other comics, you know, but with an athlete, and I realize like, and I'm a huge sports fanatic and I wrote for the ESPYs last year.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And it was a great experience just because I wanted to be around tons of athletes. But at the same time, like what I realized about sports and why I like sports so much, and I've become a bigger fan as I've lived out here, is that it's the only thing in my life that's fair. You know, it's the 100%, one constant where 100%. You're like, this is based on true ability. This is based on effort.
And rules.
Rules.
Yeah. Fair. And, you know. And,
it's never like. Well,
and rules well, that a book that exists before the game. And this is. Yeah. I'm 100%.
Like we were going to put you on the team, but you have brownish hair. And
that's it. I think fucking,
a beard.
Fucking fighting, dancing, and any kind of sport, you know, that's what I love about it. Because you can't, your publicist. The hype is not going to help you once you're in that bed, in that ring, on that mat, or on that field, or on that dance floor. You either can do that shit or you can't, man.
Right. Win or lose.
Yeah. And by the way, guess what else is like that? Comedy.
Yeah.
Stand-up comedy.
Yeah, totally.
You can be as famous as it gets. You can be the most famous human being in the world. The audience is going to give you 3 minutes. It's going to get fucking quiet after that.
Right.
You either got the goods or not. And very few people can get in front of a bunch of strangers anywhere in the world and make them laugh straight for an hour. But I think you and I can do that. And
yeah.
So it's always, it is a very specific skill set that I'm always proud of.
What I find
fascinating. Too, but keep going. Enough about me.
That shirt is really tight.
You hear that, listeners, all 50,000 of you, whatever the fuck it is? I'm like, what is this, the Brian Callen show? Oh, it is. Sorry.
Oh, it is the Brian. It's always the Brian Callen show, no matter where we are.
It's the Sarah Tiana show.
What I would really find interesting, though, with you is, like, if your act was a little bit more personal, I wonder what that would look like.
Well, you know what's funny?
If you actually talked about, like, your daughter.
That's all I'm doing now.
Good. I haven't seen that in a while.
Talking about my dad and my daughter.
Great.
That's all I'm talking about now. Mm-hmm. It's funny you say that, because the fundamental difference between what I did my last special, which was just a lot of, like, you know, energy. And
yeah, of
it's
course.
Funny, and it always did well. But what I do now when I write stand-up is, and actually it's funny you say it because I wanted to talk to you about this. I don't even try to be funny. I just start asking myself questions. What am I ashamed of? What am I afraid of? Who would I rather be? Who am I really? Who am I pretending to be? That's where all the gold is for me now. And that's how I came up with my whole new hour. I said, I'm going to get, I had a conversation with Joe Rogan and said, look, I saw your special. Mm-hmm. Said, you have a lot of English on the ball. You can get away with a lot of shit because you got energy and you know, you're funny. But he said, but you could be great. And the difference is being personal.
Right.
And whether I'm great or not, or whether that happens, it's not even so interesting to me. What's more interesting is that I'm honest and that you stay authentic. And that's where Bill Burr and Louis C.K. and those
Gaffigan,
are the guys,
like
and Gaffigan, they're authentic.
But people come back because they feel it. The reason that fans stay around is because they feel like they know you. Yeah. They know who you are as a person. They know your family. Like with Gaffigan, like we know his kids. We know his wife. Like he's talked about them for years.
Yeah.
With Louis, like we know about his divorce. Like we're invested in his life.
100%.
Not just his act. And like I told this to Dane Cook years ago.
Because an act is a trick, isn't it? In a way, right? It's almost like a magic trick that you're doing to the audience. But when you let him in your life,
Yeah, I compare it to people who can sing and then people who have talent.
Mm.
You know, people who, like, some people are just great singers, yeah, and you can't take that away from them. But then you have people who are great singers and people flock to them because their energy on stage is so powerful, and we also know them as a person, and their songs are resonating with us deep inside because we know that happened to them. Like, we know their dad died of cancer, and, like, that's important to us in the song. And, like, so I feel like when you have comics like you with your last special, I feel like that was showing that you're a great singer.
Mm-hmm.
But this one is showing that you have talent.
That's a great analogy. And you said you talked to Dane Cook?
I did, years ago, because I was like, you know, his, I think it was like his mother or something that passed away.
Yeah, both his parents.
Yeah.
Within 6 months.
And then his brother, like, stole money from him. Like,
yeah, he had a hard time, man.
He doesn't talk about any of that.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that he should, but people know that, and by not addressing it, it feels like an elephant in the room. And I'm like, are people going to want to come back and see you if, like, it's very easy for people to forget about grilled cheese sandwiches.
Yeah.
Very easy. As you're a college kid, you grow out of that.
Yeah.
But if you become invested in someone's life and their person, if you feel like you know them, like they're a brother to you, they're part of your family, they're always going to buy that second ticket. They're going to buy the third ticket.
It's an amazing analogy, Sarah. And you're I haven't heard anybody put it in those terms yet. And I couldn't agree with you more.
Thank you.
And I'm sorry it's taken me at 47 in 2 weeks that long to actually not only understand that, but embrace it and do it.
Yeah, we all do it in our own time, though. I mean,
yeah, I've always been a slow bloomer. Thank God I look 30. Thank God I look 30. And that's the most. That's the point of the story. That's the point of my comment.
Right. But I'm the same way.
You're so fucking right, though.
It took me so long as a comic to, like, and I felt like 3-4 years ago when I released my first CD, I was like, this is amazing. Like, I'm so funny. And I still wasn't
fully. And you are.
I wasn't. Yeah, but I, at that point, I was a good singer.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, now I feel like my act is so personal to me, and I'm not even, like, I'm getting ready to, I want to tape it and, like, put out a new
CD,
a new special DVD, and then I also want to, like, interview my ex-boyfriends. It's a special feature.
Wow.
Because I think it's important, because I'm always talking about what guys do wrong.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
So I need them to tell me what I did wrong.
I love that.
You know, just so we get a balance. But I think it's taken me so long to just, like, get to that point where, and, you know, when Tommy wouldn't pass me for so long at the store, I was like, why, gosh, you know, like, everybody wants me here. Then I realized once I started getting into who I really am, like, oh, now I'm really connecting with the crowd, you know. And I feel like you asked me, like, how I became a comic, and I think that's because, like, my parents, as great as they were, they didn't talk about emotion, and I had to start reading people. And even though I lived in the South, I wasn't Southern. Because I wasn't born there.
You were an outsider looking
in. Yeah, I was always an outsider looking in. And I had lots of friends, and I fit into every category. But I didn't belong in every category. I guess that's, like,
I always felt the same way.
Yeah, so it's like, so you become an observer, and I'm a trained observer now. And, like, I always say, as a comedian, we get paid to notice things that most people don't notice. Mm. Like, some guy will be walking down the street with, like, an afro and, like, chains hanging from his ears and nose and tattoos everywhere. But I'll notice that he's wearing Skechers. Like, that's what I'll notice. And most people wouldn't notice that, you know? So we have to find the darkest point of the dark.
Well, it sounds like you're speaking like a director. Have you thought about directing? I mean,
well, I do. I direct. I have a sketch comedy company that I started, like, 9 years ago.
Hmm.
And I direct shows there. That's
how
I know
Hunter. And
you
write a lot, too. Are you writing on a show right now?
I'm writing my own show right now. And then I'm also producing producing Rick Ingram's new show that I developed.
Oh, wow.
Called the Rick Ingram Experience, which is
he is an experience.
Yeah, it's the cannibalization of late night. So, like, basically, he goes out, talks to people, and then he goes, "You seem interesting. Would you like to be a guest on my show?" And then he interviews them in front of the audience because feel like people are interesting.
Yeah.
And then I have a cooking show called This Tastes Funny, which is which is with comics. But then I'm writing my own. I have I'm working with CBS on my own pilot called The Single Wife, which is about how I'm a wife in a world with no husbands. That's kind of what my whole act is about anymore. Just like how men can't really do things anymore. They can't build things. They can't.
Yeah.
And that's what's sexy to me. Like, I want a man to build me something, and I want to make him dinner.
Right.
And I want to, like, surprise him with cookies, and I want to, like, you know, like, I...
But you see, when you talk that way, that's exactly what I talk about. You know, I there's this idea that, you know, testosterone and the original caveman, or just the, you know, men, for example, me, I don't feel appropriate. I feel like a caveman a lot of times.
Right.
I have aggression. I still like to, I was just in Boston in a boxing ring and then rolling around on a mat trying to choke somebody's life out. It's not relevant to anything. I like doing that shit.
You're a man.
Right. And so, and I, what I notice is that women appreciate that. The women's movement and this sensitive man stuff, there's a place for everything. But guess what? We are still, you're still dealing with our DNA, the natural aggression of a man, the natural, there are things that I think we are hardwired to breed with, to be drawn to, etc. And when you try to fight nature, good luck.
Yeah.
Good luck, man.
No.
I haven't seen it work yet. So
no, well, you have to
talking that way is very, very, very refreshing. You don't hear a lot of women saying what you're saying.
I know. And I feel like that's really unfortunate. I feel like it's like, yes, I believe that we are all, you know, can do similar jobs, but like not everything. Like I don't feel like I can play football. I enjoy watching it. But at the same time, it's like, no, I want the guy to like fix things. My parents always had this rule. Like my mom did everything on the inside of the house and my dad did everything on the outside.
That's awesome.
And that's how I feel like I want my life. Like, and I appreciate that a man like should have calluses on both hands, not just one from jerking off all the time. You know, like I feel like that's
you
what
have
a
calluses
man...
on your brain. Hunter does CrossFit though. You're a big Dutch, handsome Dutchman.
But it doesn't just have to be like building stuff. It has to do
with I hire people and I spend
care.
A lot of money on
he does.
I have a staff.
He does direct them. Like he stands outside.
Direct the shit out of them.
Pepe.
I remember once like when I was living with Aaron Cater, like my ex-boyfriend, and like something went wrong with the cable and I was like trying to fix it and like I couldn't figure out like the wiring and I was like, can you just fix that? I don't know what's wrong with the TV. And he's like, Sarah, it's so easy. You just do this. Like, what do you mean you can't do it? I'm like, you have to be good at something. You have to be good at something. I'm paying the bills, you know? Like, I do all of our accounting.
Easy, easy. Hey, Aaron might be listening.
He's not listening, trust me.
And he's certainly not listening anymore.
He's laying on his couch. Oh,
he's definitely, yeah.
Aaron, you Mormon Palestinian.
Yeah, you Mormon Palestinian, who I love. But like, and I tell him this to his face all the time, so I don't feel like he can't hear it. But it's also just like, no, I want to brag about you.
Yeah.
As a woman, I want to brag. Like, he's so strong. Like, oh my God. Like, not that I think fighting is like
sexy.
I don't really like
that.
My
wife saw me at the Comedy Store one time. There was going to be a fight. And I ran behind the guy because he was faced off with my friend. And my wife was, what were you doing? And I go, what was I doing? I was going to fucking knock him out if he came at my friend. And she goes, that's really sexy. Yeah. I'm having sex with you tonight. Yeah. I was like, hey, that's the way I think, man.
It's not even just that, though. It doesn't have to be fighting. It can just be like remembering to do, like thinking in advance.
Right.
And I feel like that's like.
Did you ever hear the story about the Comedy Store where there was this huge guy who had been passing counterfeit bills. And I walk in, there's this giant guy and he's skipping into the main
skipping?
Room. He's skipping into the main room, skipping. And this giant dude next to me turns around and goes, what's up, bro? He was this big Nebraska corn-fed football player. I was like, yeah, man, that guy's a big guy. Mm-hmm. He goes, what's up, bro? And the skipping guy goes, what, man? And he just, the Nebraska boy grabs him around the middle of his body and throws him on the ground.
Uh-huh.
You're passing counterfeit bills, and gets on him and starts trying to get his arms behind him. But the guy was huge.
Mm-hmm.
So I jump on the guy. I go, put your hands behind your fucking back. And I wanted to use a little of my jujitsu.
But and his your wrist, old acting line.
His wrists were so thick, and I was on a raft. So the huge
a
guy,
raft?
He felt like a raft. He was that wide.
Okay, I was like, there's the
guy,
raft at the comedy.
The criminal felt like he was that wide. He was like a raft. So I'm on top of this guy with these huge wrists, trying to hold his wrists. And the corn-fed guy gets off me, thinking I'm a cop.
Mm-hmm.
So as I'm holding him, the corn-fed guy, now everybody from the Comedy Store comes in and sees Brian holding a giant guy down with his arms behind his back, and the dude goes, bro, you on Comedy Central? And I go, oh, sometimes. And the dude I'm holding turns around like that, and he goes, you on Mad TV? I go, I used to be. And the other dude goes, the fuck out of here. Like that, I'm holding him down. He's turning around and looking at me as I'm holding his wrist. And I really, the guy now realizes I'm not a cop, and I'm not strong enough to hold this giant dude, but I'm sitting on him.
Right.
And everybody comes in and sees Brian holding the guy.
Right.
When the cops come, the corn-fed guy doesn't want to get sued, so he tells them, the cops, that I grabbed him, threw him to the ground, and held him down. So now I come back from the Comedy Store the next day, and the story is Brian tackled this huge guy, jiu-jitsu'd him, held him down. The guy recognized him, and the cops came. So, and I've never told anybody but you that that's a lie. I've been walking around like a hero for about 4 years.
I was going to say, like, because we always get back to the Brian show. You know what I mean? We always get back to the Brian show.
It goes back to being a man, and you were talking about if you have to fake it, which I did. But yeah, but I love what you're saying.
I think it's important for men to be men and for women to, like, feel like ladies. And I think that that's also the problem, is that, like, we still need men to make us feel like ladies. Like, that's why it feels good for you guys to, like, pick us up and throw us around sometimes, you know? Or, like, we want to feel dainty. We want to feel like you're thinking about us, you know, and that you treat us with respect. Like, you put your hand on our back and guide us through, or you open the door for us. I mean, that's respectful. And then,
or I take a strong hand to your backside.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But then, like, you know,
I'm getting really horny.
In reverse, you know, like, I don't make fun of you in front of your friends or your family, you know, and I brag about you to people, as you know, to your bosses, or, like, whenever we're around, you know. And that's, but I wouldn't be with a guy that I couldn't do that to. It wouldn't be fake, you know what I mean?
I always talk about how men want to be admired. It's very important. Men want to feel important, and we want to be admired. And that is, you couldn't have hit it on the nail more. That's exactly what it is. It's like sex. I want to think that my dick is bigger than anybody else's. And everybody before me had a mushroom cap and had sex with you in the missionary style, and you hated it. That's how guys are. We're territorial. And it's something that is so ingrained in our DNA. And to try to fight it, like you said, is exactly right.
You can't fight it. But for me, it's difficult to even find a person like that, because I feel like men like to be taller. They like to be stronger, they like to make more money, and they like to be the funny one. And I take one of those away, sometimes two, depending on where you wait tables. So I can't... it's just very difficult to find somebody that, you know, is confident enough to be with someone like me. Like, I have lots of stories. I've been around the world. I like going on vacations by myself. I have a dog. You know, like, there's a lot of intimidating factors.
You go into a room and it's hard to compete with you, because you're just as witty or wittier.
But I don't look at a man like that. I don't look at myself as, like, better than anybody. I just look at myself as, like, oh, this is my job to captivate this particular place. And I'm naturally interested in people. I feel like I meet men a lot who are super successful, but then they never ask me any questions about myself.
Oh, God.
And that's such a turnoff, because I'm like, okay, you know, like, you're not interested. You're just interested in you.
It's how we're raised.
Yeah.
It's just how we're raised. I've had to learn, man.
You have to be interested, not interesting.
Yes.
And I feel like that's on both sides. Like, I want to know so much about you. I ask lots of questions. That's why I got kicked out of church twice growing up. You know, like, I'm an inquisitive person, and that's what comedians are. But, like, when you don't want to know about me, that's a huge red flag.
Well, I look back on my relationships as a young man, and this girl did a short film where the guy was playing me. And I was so appalled at how I treated her without realizing it, because I never asked her anything. It was all the Brian Callen
show.
And I can't even imagine.
I know. And you know, that's not attractive.
No.
It's very, very important.
But those are also phases that we go through. And I think to become a man, you have to be able to reflect and go, I did that. I'm not going to do that anymore. Yeah. And, you know, I think you know the story about me getting, like, catfished by the military guy that I did on Ari's podcast.
No.
I don't know. I met a guy in Djibouti, Africa, when I was on a military tour. He said he was Special Forces, and, like, he had been in the military. He lost his family when he was 17, so the military was his whole new family. And we developed this whole relationship on Skype, you know, after we met. And he was going to move here. We're going to get married. Like, we sent love letters every day. It was, like, amazing. And then he just started pulling away. And then I started, like, Googling him and looking for him, and I found out, you know, that I found his mom on Facebook, that he wasn't from Brooklyn, he was from Pennsylvania, or he was from Connecticut.
Oh, he's a sociopath.
Yeah, and that he had a wife and kids and all that stuff. And so I did a podcast about it with Ari, and it really blew up because it, like, was the day I found out. It just happened to be. And then after the podcast aired, all of these women from around the world started contacting me, like, I'm engaged to him too. We've been together for 2-3 years. Like, I think we're up to, like, 9 fiancés and 7 children from different women.
Oh, he's a real sociopath. He's a real crazy person.
Yeah, so, you know, but he never asked me any questions about myself. So now when that happens, it's like, it's practice. Like, Whitney and I talk about this all the time. Like, once something happens to you, you have to go, okay, this is my lesson. Now I have to practice. The next time I meet somebody like that, oh, you're not asking me any questions? Okay, I know what that means.
Red flag.
Yeah. So
I'm glad I asked pretty you a amazing. Lot of questions. Yeah. we got to wrap this up.
Your questions were, do you remember that time at the Comedy Store when I...
yeah, baby. Yeah. Well, I've always been one of your biggest fans.
I know. It's very sweet of you.
Well, it's not sweet. It's just I know the difference between real talent and regular, you know, shit in this town. And, mm-hmm. and you're not just a talent, you're smart, and you got to come back on.
You've always been so nice to me, and you've given me so many pep talks at night, like after sets, and like you would help me with like exercise issues or like just like mental things.
Well,
like,
I'm older, so I believe in you. So
yeah, but you never did it in a truly creepy way, like a little kind of creepy.
I'm always a little creepy around you, baby. Yeah. I've always thought you were adorable. So
I mean,
believe me, my motives were probably like maybe she'll make out with me. Hey, look at this. Hey, check out what's going on down here.
I know.
No, but you were always dating. I think you. I think Aaron and you. There were. You got to be careful. You got friends that date other comics. You got to.
Yeah, I don't date.
No, but
comics
you were always. You were always.
I just fucked them. Whatever. I'm just joking.
Whatever I said was worth it. You're one of those people that you know. I love watching you get successful.
And so. I the same with you. I enjoy like seeing. I enjoy going to the movies, and I'm like, oh my god, Brian Callen's in this.
Speaking of which, don't go to Ride Along unless you want to see the shit out of me.
I can't wait. I'm very excited.
Sarah Tiana, where are you going to be stand-up wise? Anywhere?
When this weekend or
this is going to air every day for the next 2 years.
Well, this weekend I'm in DC, and then
at the DC Improv,
at the Addison or Arlington.
Oh yeah, I've
draft
done that.
House.
Yeah, the Arlington Draft House.
Yeah,
I've done
I'm
that
excited
room.
About that.
You're going to have a good time.
Okay, good.
Sarah Tiana, the Arlington Draft House this weekend. Go see her.
Thank you.
And Hunter, thanks so much. For just being here,
for being,
being tall, being Dutch, and being handsome.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
He's got a big brain and a piece on him, and a tailpiece. What do you see? His ass. I mean, a real tailpiece. All right, we're gonna go bang the three of us. We'll see you later.
I hope I'm as.
Oh wait, I'm gonna be. Where am I gonna be? I'm gonna be in. I'll be in Austin. I'll be in Seattle this weekend. I'll be in Austin next weekend, January 23rd, 24th, 25th, and the 26th, my birthday.
Oh.
That was awesome.
Thank you.
You've been listening to The Brian Callen Show. Be sure to visit briancallen.com for information about this episode as well as past and future episodes. You can follow Brian on Twitter at Brian Callen and like him on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/Brian Callen Comedy. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time.